Tadarya Dharmaha Pabaliyate Dhirnam Manashramacharya Yutas Srahimayaha Tato Artha Amabhinive Shitatmanam Sunam Kabinam Eva Tadarya Dharma Pravadiyate Nyunam Vanashramacharya Yutas Svahimayaha Tathorartha Kama Vinevi Setatmanam Shunam Kapinam Iva Varna Shankaraha Adharya Dharma Pravadiyate Nirinam Vanasamacharya Yutas Trahimayaha Tatorata Kama Vinideshitatmanam Shunam Kapinam Iva Varna Sankaraha Tadharya Dharma Pravadiyate Nirinam Vanashramacharya Yutas Trahimayaha Tatorata Kama Vinideshitatmanam Shunam Kapinam Iva Varna Sankaraha
Shunam Kapinam Iva Varna Sankaraha
Tadharya Dharma Pravadiyate Nirnam
Tadharya Dharma Pravadiyate
Nirnam Vanashramacharya Yutas Trahimaya
Vanashramacharya Yutas Trahimaya
Tathartha Kama Vinideshitatmanam Shunam Kapinam Iva Varna Sankaraha
Shunam Kapinam Iva Varna Sankaraha
At that time
Arya
Progressive
Civilization
Dharma
Engagement
Pabaliyate Is systematically vanquished
Nirnam
Of humankind.
Varna.
Caste.
Ashrama.
Orders of society.
Acharya Yutaha.
Composed in a good manner.
Trahimaya.
In terms of the Vedic injunction.
Tataha.
Thereafter.
Artha.
Economic development. Kama abhinivesita.
Fully absorbed in sense gratification.
Atmanam.
Of men.
Shunam.
Like dogs.
Kapinam.
Like monkeys.
Eva, thus,
Varnasankara,
unwanted population. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. At that time, the people in general will fall systematically from the path of a progressive civilization in respect to the qualitative engagements of the castes and the orders of society and Vedic injunctions. Thus they will be more attracted to economic development, to sense gratification, and as a result there will be an unwanted population on the level of dogs and monkeys. This is a text which is in the chapter entitled Parikshit, cursed by a Brahmin boy. And the father of the boy is telling the boy what will be the consequences of the curse which he has put on Maharaj Parikshit. Purport by Prabhupada. It is foretold herein that in the absence of monarchical regime, the general mass of people will be an unwanted population like dogs and monkeys. As the monkeys are too sexually inclined and dogs are shameless in sexual intercourse, the general mass of population born of legitimate connection will systematically go astray from the Vedic way of good manners and qualitative engagements in the castes and orders of life. The Vedic way of life is the progressive march of the civilization of the Aryans. The Aryans are progressive in Vedic civilization. The Vedic civilization's destination is to go back to Godhead, back home, where there is no birth, no death, no old age, and no disease. The Vedas direct everyone not to remain in the darkness of the material world, but to go towards the light of the spiritual kingdom, far beyond the material sky. The qualitative caste system and the orders of life are scientifically planned by the Lord and his representatives, the great rishis. The perfect way of life gives all sorts of instruction in things both material and spiritual. The Vedic way of life does not allow any man to be like the monkeys and dogs. A degraded civilization of sense gratification and economic development is the byproduct of a godless or kingless government of the people, by the people, and for the people. The people should not, therefore, begrudge the poor administrations they themselves elect. So, again, this is the consequence of an irreligious act, a serious irreligious act. According to the nature of the person that we deal with, the consequences are more or less. If it is a great personality, the consequences are great. And if it is a lesser personality, the consequences are less. Just like if you go to a very wealthy person and you request some help, you can get great help. If you go to a pauper, at least financially, he cannot give much help to you. Similarly, if we go to a great saintly person, he can give great help. And on the other hand, if we contact someone who is without spiritual assets, they cannot do very much for us. And in reverse, if we wrong an important personality, there are serious consequences. On the other hand, if we wrong a lesser personality, the consequences are not as severe. So here's a great personality. Grandson of the Pandavas, the monarch, the king, a ruler of a magnitude far beyond any present day leader of the world. Now leaders of the world at best are leaders of one nation, but it is said that Maharaj Parikshit was the emperor of the world. 5,000 years ago, the kings of Hastinapur ruled over the entire world. That means that places other than in India was subordinate. At least they could not mount any challenge when they were challenged. They could not defeat the Pandavas. And so Maharaj Pariksit was actually the emperor of the world. No one was his equal. So we find that a curse placed on this king naturally has very serious consequences. And these consequences are described here. The same are also spoken of in the first chapter of Bhagavad Gita. You may recall that in the Bhagavad Gita, first chapter, Arjuna is giving arguments to Krishna about why he should not fight. And one of the arguments he gives is that if I fight, and if we are successful in killing our enemies happen to include elders, very, very respectable, worthy elders. If they are killed, then religion, which is reposed in the elders, will be lost. And when the elders are destroyed, religion is lost, the women will be unprotected. And when the women are unprotected, then there will be opportunity for illicit sexual connections, and as a result, there will be unwanted population. Same word, Varna Sankara, unwanted population will result. And this unwanted population will disturb the peace of the world. Aryan means a progressive civilization. It is not what we have today. Un-Aryan. This is un-Aryan. They are not at all progressive. They do not know that the goal of life is to realize Vishnu. They think that progress means to increase sensual pleasure. The two animals which are given here as examples typify a special sex life. Monkeys and dogs. There's a statement that a monkey appears to be a renunciate because monkeys live in the forest. And traditionally, renunciates live in the forest. Monkeys have no clothing on. Similarly, renunciates did not bother with clothing. Monkeys are vegetarians, and renunciates should be vegetarians. Monkeys live beneath the tree. Of course, they live on trees, but renunciates live beneath trees. So a monkey seems to be a renunciate. However, what is the business of the monkey? He keeps 20 female monkeys with him so that he can enjoy sex life as far as possible. And it actually... sometimes they even take, at least in India, they would take some of the potency of the monkeys and inject it into humans if they wanted to try to remain sexually potent. So, and in Krishna Lila we see this, we beat a gorilla. There are so many examples of sexually active monkeys. So, that's one example. The monkeys are very sexually ambitious. And another is the dog, who is described as shameless, because it is a fact that dogs make no distinction, nor do monkeys particularly, but dogs especially do not make distinction regarding who their sexual partners are. In other words, it is very common for a dog, for example, to have sex with the female dog from which it took its birth. In other words, you know, if it was the equivalent within human society, a son having sex with a mother, and that of course is not permitted, it's illicit. And they're shameless in all respects. I recall a very graphic example. when we were on the Nambutui Parikrama, that these two dogs were having sex, and when the kirtan party came, the clouds, kartals, etc., scared the dogs, and so the female dog began to run, and the male dog, who was having sex, could not get released from the female dog, who was being dragged by his genitals through the streets. And I thought this is the most dreadful example I ever saw of not just shameless sex, but how entangling sex is. I mean, if we, you know, imagine that these were two humans, what the condition is. So it was a very great example. And unfortunately, human beings have practically become reduced in this way. So much so that the heroes of today are persons who are very sexually active. They are regarded as models, role models. You know? In other words, there are no real standards any longer. There's no such thing as an Aryan standard, but very, very degraded persons are now occupying positions of importance. And it's not surprising. At least here we find the statement is given by this Leonard Bramman to his son that we will be the cause, and for all these things we shall be responsible, he says in the previous verse. So that's very serious. The Brahmins are here and held accountable for the degradation of this age. In other words, one who is in a position of responsibility is the cause or the responsible agent in regard to someone's dependent sinful activities. If a disciple sins, the guru is responsible. If a child sins, the parents are responsible. If a student goes wrong, the teacher is responsible. At least this is how we should accept it. And therefore, it is said that a guru, a parent, a teacher, an administrator, a government leader should be very vigilant to make certain that there is no sin. Just like Maharaj Pritchard would tour around his kingdom to see that there was no sin. The problem today, of course, is that the gurus, the parents, the teachers, the leaders are themselves the sinners. And sometimes even it is the students, the disciples, etc., who have to call attention to the behavior of those who are supposed to be their authorities. Everything has become reversed. Again, because this is one of some, this is an unwanted population. And therefore, the result is that people are led astray. They cannot achieve the goal of life, which is to develop our Krishna consciousness. So, the caste orders of life are especially important. Caste and caste and the orders of society are very important in the Vedic injunctions. This is scientific, Prabhupada says, created by Krishna, Charakodvana Maya system. Guna karma vibhavasaha. Krishna says, I have created this. Sometimes people criticize this caste system. But Prabhupada correctly notes that in every society there are these four divisions. There are intellectuals, there are administrators, there are farmers or suppliers of the necessities of life, and there are workers. There are these four divisions. It doesn't matter whether you name them Brahmin, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, or you name them something else. But in every society of the world, there are these divisions. It is a fact. And it is as natural as there are divisions within the human body. There's a head, There are arms, there's a belly, there are legs. So as the body is divided into different parts for fulfilling various functions, society is meant to be divided scientifically. Scientifically means that there are specific duties. The head has specific duties. Brahmins have particular duties. The problem today is that the intellectual class does not fulfill the duties of a Brahmin. They don't know what the duties are, nor do they have the actual qualities, except for the fact that they're very intelligent. But that intelligence is misguided. They do not have, they're not peaceful. They're not learned in scripture. They're not sense controlled. They're not austere, which are all qualities of a Brahmin. If an intellectual is just smart, but not peaceful, not austere, not knowledgeable in religious scripture, he'll create habit. What will he teach with his knowledge, with his intellect? What will he think of? Then we see practically that these intellectuals, you know, just as I was getting on the flight to come here from Houston, and there was the news, and, you know, all of the businessmen, well, they may not be Brahmins, they certainly not Brahmins, but they may not be intellectual, but all the businessmen, at least they were one of the three higher categories, and not just base workers, there was a few of them, but mostly they were business people, and they were, you know, suddenly everyone's attention focused on the television screen, which was near the entranceway to the plane, because they were describing a new law which was about to be enacted, which was that the dancers in the nightclub, professional dancers, would no longer, I believe, they're debating whether they should be allowed to come within 3 inches of the dance partner, or, you know, a foot or more. And everybody thought this was very, and they had some woman, of course, you know, they're dancing. And every businessman looked, you know. I mean, because this is their interest. This is their interest. This is the interest of the administrators. This is the interest of the intellectual. Sex is their interest. You know, when they have free time, away, you know, the result, the fruit of their efforts, when they have free time, what is it spent on? You know, simply on sex and on frivolous activities like sports, that's all. This is how people engage their free time. This is their, quote, enjoyment. And therefore, it is a civilization of animals. We are the parts of two-legged animals. They have the base taste and interest of the animal civilization. What is Varnashrama? Varnashrama Dharma means to scientifically organize society into its four divisions and four orders of the society. That means the brahmacharis, the celibate students, the grihasthas, those who are married, the varnaprasthas, those who are retired, and the sannyasis, those who are renounced. These four orders of society and the four caste divisions, each are meant to cooperate in a specific way for the welfare of the overall body of society. Krishna consciousness movement is trying to illustrate this to some degree. Of course, we know that it is not possible to fully activate Varnashrama Dharma in this Kali Yuga. And therefore, the overriding principle is bhakti, devotion to Krishna. And that we have to see. It is stated in the Bhagavatam that if the performance of one's duties in varna and ashram do not lead to an attraction to hear the narrations, the glories of the Lord, then they are simply, those duties are simply a waste of time. Therefore, at every moment, we have to measure ourselves or measure our advancement by how keen we are to hear the glories of the Lord. A society which is organized to give its members sufficient time Bahari Kata is an Aryan society, a society in which people simply follow a program of drudgery, economic development, as it was mentioned here. For economic, like the greatest civilization of sense gratification and economic development is the byproduct of godless or kingless government of the people, by the people, and for the people. I believe those are words from the Declaration.
Gettysburg Address.
So, these are words from the Gettysburg Address, from an eminent leader of our country. But Prabhupada's point is that's not exactly what society is meant to be, of the people, by the people, and for the people. If you want to say it's for the people, then first of all, the foremost person of all is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So if it's going to be for the people, please do not exclude the most important person of all, God. But that is the problem, that God has been removed from the formula, godless society, or kingless government. The king was a representative of God. So in a society in which there is no administrative leader who represents God, it is as good as godless. In such a society, what becomes all important? What's the prominent activity? Economic development. And for what purpose? Sense gratification. Artha, kama. These two. Economic development and to fulfill sensual desires. On the other hand, bhakti means to fulfill the desires of Krishna. And our Krishna consciousness program is arranged in such a way that that is meant to take place. Whether it is chanting his own names, worshiping the deity, going on sankirtan, studying in our gurukul, all of these activities are meant for this goal, to achieve this purpose of pleasing Krishna. When Krishna is pleased, we automatically become pleased. What is pleasure? I was listening this morning to a tape from 1977, which Prabhupada was talking to his son, Vrindavan Chandra, and he's telling him about happiness. He keeps saying, you think that happiness is to get so much money. He says, but actually, happiness is Krishna consciousness. That is real happiness, not simply to get so much money. He said, why do you need more than 1,000 rupees or 2,500 rupees or whatever? And he was pointing out how simply by serving Krishna, Krishna's providing everything. Just like we see our brahmacharis, they have no job. They're simply their own business going on, book distribution, sankirtan. Krishna's providing the clothing they need to wear, providing them nice prasadam, providing them a place to rest. And they have no anxiety. There is no anxiety. Not so many problems. But the more we become entangled into worldly pursuits, actually we simply become distressed, and our anxiety increases. Therefore, Vedic culture advises to try and keep life very simple, not to become entangled in so many types of fruitive activities. And Prabhupada was saying that simply by pushing on this Krishna consciousness movement, we have so many establishments. And he was trying to show how in his own life, he said, I have done nothing but serve Krishna. And Krishna has given me so many palatial buildings. And he was describing, he said in London, my bath, my toilet, he was sitting in Vrindavan in his quarters, in his house, which is quite a big room. He said, in the Bhaktivedanta manner, my toilet is half the size of this room. It's so big. Then he described Detroit. He said, in Detroit, in Devasadana, he said he built this building 50 years ago and it cost $6 million. And it's fourteen hundred ounces of gold, I think, in the ceilings. Some phenomenal amount of gold, on the ceiling, gold leaf in the ceilings. And it was going on and on. The floors there are all marble floors heated underneath the marble. He said, all I did was preach Krishna consciousness. So he was trying to encourage his son, you should become a devotee. Instead of thinking how to push on business and how to make, you know, money and all of these things, he said, Krishna is the wealthiest of all. He has enough. If you just become a devotee, all the money you require will be supplied. If you just push forward the principles of Krishna consciousness, he said, because look at my own example, he said. I did not go to America to do business. I simply went to spread Krishna consciousness. And the consequence is, he said, I have 140 establishments all over the world, and in each one of them, 50 to 100 servants. And all I did was try to spread Krishna consciousness. He said, so why don't we do the same? He was encouraging his son. And we could encourage ourselves. Why don't we do the same? Have we no faith that Krishna is the Lakshmina? He is the Lord of Lakshmi. He's the Lord of the goddess of fortune. And so, if he desires, if he is satisfied, there's no end to how much he can give. The first letter I received from Prabhupada was on this point. I was giving him the results of our sankirtan, and Prabhupada wrote back, don't be so worried about money. He said, if Krishna wants, Krishna can give you the whole USA. But do you know what to do with it? If he does, give it to you. So we should be more concerned with our Krishna consciousness. We should be more concerned with spreading Krishna consciousness. If the if Krishna and his representatives are pleased, then all of the necessities of life, all of our need for happiness will be met. And if they're not pleased, then there's no way we'll become happy. And there's no way we will have wealth. As God can give wealth, we can take it away. And it's not simply a question of working hard. And it's not simply a question of karma anymore, because we're now under the influence of Krishna in the form of bhakti. And when you become a devotee, it's not simply a question any longer of what is your karma. A devotee is not under the laws of karma. He's under Krishna's personal guidance. So Krishna knows what each devotee requires. So really all we have to do is to serve and satisfy Krishna. And then he'll give us what we require. We have to have such faith and devotion. Otherwise, what separates us from ordinary materialists? We've done much different. So, how we behave is a sign of our advancement, not, Prabhupada said, the fact that we do or don't grow forearms. You know, liberation, Prabhupada said, doesn't mean that you grow two extra arms. That may happen in the future, may not, depending on where you go. But that's not what liberation means. Liberation is the quality of your actions. We'll determine, we can judge if someone is liberated. How far you are free from the action of the modes of nature. That is the determining factor of whether or not you are liberated. How much you are free from lust. How much you are free from envy. How much you are free from greed. How much are you free from the pushing of the modes of material nature? How far do you act on the principle of being the spirit soul and not this body, not this mind, not this intellect and false ego? This is a sign of liberation. In other words, as it states here, Vedic injunctions. How far are you under the Vedic injunctions? Because that is what is Aryan. Aryan means scientific division of varna and ashrama, and under the guidance of Vedic injunction. So are we under the guidance of Vedic injunction? Are we acting under the instruction of the Vedas as it is instructed by Guru? This is the sign of our being Aryan advanced. So all of these things are the responsibility of those who are leaders, whether they are in any position of responsibility. And when such leaders abuse their positions of responsibility, then everything becomes deteriorated. So if we want to reverse this curse of this unqualified Brahmin boy, And we who are in positions of responsibility, whether parents or teachers or gurus or, for that matter, even devotees in general, because you're all brahmins and creatures. If you're in any one of those positions, then you must act in an exemplary manner, and you must teach by your words and in an exemplary manner. And then the curse of this boy will be reversed. Well, does anyone have any questions? Yes, Jack.
When you describe the problem, was describing the preacher is son. So what is your impediment? What are the impediments in this state that we have to overcome?
What are the impediments of faith? Is that what you're saying? What's the connection with Prabhupada preaching to the Lord?
Well, he was trying to tell us some needs like faith in Krishna. So what keeps one from having that faith?
What keeps one from having faith? Well, obviously, if one is, if the desires are very, very strong, then one cannot calm them down sufficiently, and therefore faith becomes very difficult ingredient. Faith is engendered by hearing. So, hearing is considered to be essential for calming down passion. Hear from me, Krishna says to Arjuna. Because you are able to hear from me, then your intelligence will be activated. And when your intelligence is activated, then your faith will increase. So our faith is increased by hearing. The Prabhupada went on and on in this conversation, went on for 30 minutes, saying the same thing again and again and again. So association with the proper persons, and by hearing regularly, our faith is revived, and then we follow. Good association is essential. And that's why daily you're supposed to attend the morning Bhagavatam class. You're supposed to come to the morning program. Devotees don't do that. I thought that I would try to increase the number of classes, so I was thinking that I would start to give some extra classes this year. My schedule is a week. So I'm going to give a class on Wednesday morning also. And I'll give the Sunday lecture in the evening. So it's only for 3 classes instead of 1 a week. We don't take advantage. It's unfortunate that we live within the same city as this temple. Some people you'll live within the same block, they don't come on a regular basis. Well, that's unfortunate. They don't get the advantage of regular association. This process works. The association is potent. We have to take advantage of it. Another question,
Karthik? Yes, I think in the seventh canto somewhere, Prahlad explains that our karma now is determining whether we're suffering or we have the happiness or distress, whatever amount of that is determined by our previous activities, our sinful or pious activities. But you said that we now are not under that influence anymore. Now, is somebody like me who, yes, is coming to Krishna consciousness and is trying to be a devotee and is not, as you explained, taking advantage of the association and following all my vows like I should, I still under the influence of Krishna? Or?
But not as much. Then you're more under the influence of the modes and the karma. Yeah. In other words, according to the degree of surrender, one will be more or less under the control of Krishna. So it's not that you're not under Krishna's control, but you may not be entirely under Krishna's control. The moments may still be acting, the laws of karma may still be working. But for someone who's fully surrendered under Krishna, there's no question of the law of karma acting in their life. Krishna takes control. You can't say that it was Prabhupada's karma to become what he was. It's Krishna's arrangement. The law of karma didn't propel Prabhupada, Krishna propelled Prabhupada. To do Krishna's will.
Krishna Bible speaks of the path of God, that the road is very narrow and very few follow that road. Is it the same road of Krishna consciousness as well, that road is very narrow and not many will follow that as well?
Yeah, there's a similar statement about that the road is narrow and the path is narrow. There's two points. One is sometimes in Bhagavad Gita, as it said in the 7th chapter, 3rd text, Manusyanam Sahasri Shuru, Kaschit Yatata Siddhaya, Yatamati Siddhantam, Kaschit Vamdeti Tattataha. Out of many thousands, one may endeavor for perfection, and out of thousands of such persons who endeavor to become perfect, one will know me in truth. So it's not very easy, it's rare. Sudhirva is a rare thing. Bhakti is not an easy thing. Bhava Bhakti is very rarely achieved. Love of God is very rarely achieved. And the spiritual path is thought to be like a razor's edge. So certainly that's a very narrow path. So same principle.
Is matter itself Maya, or is the Maya our misuse or misidentification with matter?
Well, matter is called Maya Shakti. So Maya Shakti means the material energy. And Maya is both. Maya means illusory potency. And because illusory potency attracts us, Maya or matter, and in other words, matter and the potency, Maya Devi, who is behind matter, is the illusory potency. And we are Jiva Tattva, we are marginal. And if we associate with that Maya Shakti, then we are Maya. Our desires are also become influenced by that Maya potency. I think we have to say that Maya is the material energy. And we become influenced by mind. But we, in truth, are jivas, marginal energy. We're not Maya Shakti. We're part of the spiritual potency. But temporarily we become influenced by Maya. But that temporariness may last a very long time.
So you just mentioned that we associate with mind that more than mind. If we don't associate with mind, we associate with Krishna consciousness.
Then we're liberated. We associate with Krishna, we're Krishna consciousness, we're liberated. We associate with Maya, we're not. It all depends on our association. We're marginal. We're our marginal means on the shore. The water, it's the border between the land and the water and the ocean. So sometimes the water comes up, sometimes it goes down. Now you have to wear the marginal position. You can be influenced either way. The choice is ours. Everything depends on association. If you associate properly, you won't be in mind. And if you try to stay on your own, aloof, very difficult. Very difficult. And we feel it. The less we come to the temple, the more difficult it is to be Krishna conscious. The more we're in the temple, the easier it is. Prabhupada told me we don't have to encourage people to do business because the business tendency is so strongly in us already. He said what we have to be encouraged towards Krishna consciousness. That is something new for us. But I do not encourage my disciples, I do not have to encourage my disciples to business because they already have such things. But the tendency I have to encourage is their Krishna consciousness. Because that is something that they don't know. So we have to be encouraged in our Krishna consciousness. We cannot sacrifice Krishna consciousness for anything else. Then everything will be lost. If we have Krishna consciousness, then we can do anything. We can do this. We can take on, you know, positions of lead the government of the world. We can do it. Lord Brahma took on the position as a creator. But you create a Krishna, then do not let me forget you. Do not let me become overwhelmed by the low intention when I take on the service for you. I mean, what to speak and look at Brahma's position. Who can be in a more entangled position than Brahma? But he did it for Krishna. And Krishna promised him, I will not let you become entangled. You act under my order. So we can do any type of service, but first of all, ensure that our Krishna consciousness is intact. Then anything can be, the attempt to be successful. Alright. We'll stop here. Tomorrow morning is our Sankirtan festival, starting at the Bhagavatam time. Perhaps we'll see how we'll do it. Maybe we'll give a little class also. And then tomorrow evening I'll do a class. Shri Prabhupada ki. Jai. Bhagavatam ki.
Jai. 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 Jai.